Okay, this again won't be a technical talk, simply for lack of time. I'll talk about a reality check for quantum gravity. Now, of course, your first question might be, reality, what does that have to do with quantum gravity? And that's, of course, an excellent question. So what I have in mind for the purposes of my short talk today is kind of a collective admonishment to ourselves to remind us regularly of what we are after, ultimately, problems we are likely to encounter when we quantize gravity and the tools that are needed to overcome them and are hopefully likely to succeed. So I mean that as opposed to, you know, looking up from our daily struggle of the formalism of our individual approaches for doing this. Secondly, what I have in mind is a plea for using numerical tools to explore non-perturbative regime of quantum gravity and provide reality checks on concrete models, concrete ideas, and some lessons from causal dynamical triangulations we have learned in this context. Okay, so here comes the general reminding ourselves, so what are we ultimately after? What would we love to understand? It's of course, what are the quantum laws underlying general relativity, and how are we likely to find them? What is methodologically is the best way of going about it, and there are very many ways in which one might do this. Are time, space, causality, are they fundamental, or do they only emerge on, relatively macroscopic scales relative to the Planck scale? And can we explain things like gravitational attraction and the structure of our large scale structure of our own universe from first quantum principles? What's the quantum microstructure of space-time, and what are its phenomenological implications, observational implications, if any? Okay, where are we? Short status quo. It's been known for a long time that perturbative quantum gravity does not work in the sense of being not renormalizable. We have several non-perturbative candidate theories. They work from different premises and have reached various degrees of maturity. But globally speaking, they are all too incomplete and or have too many free parameters to make any solid predictions. And for the same reason, even comparing them is rather difficult because you are comparing at the level of, you know, formalism rather than at the level of predictions and results. What makes our life additionally hard is that there is very little of a quantum gravity phenomenology to speak of, which could help us, give us guidance to construct our theory. And of course, in the absence of experimental verification and being really very, very far away from any accessible length scales for conducting experiments, it's very difficult to even nail down what constitutes true progress in this endeavor. Still, we hope and believe that some lessons have been learned, of course, including from past failures to construct a good theory of quantum gravity. And these are both of a general and a more specific nature. So in the in view of the more kind of the more general lessons that I have learned for myself from studying and working on this subject for, far too many years by now, is number one. Well, low-dimensional models have clearly a role to play. They are beautiful in their own right. They can provide proofs of principle that certain things, certain ideas do work. But there should be a health warning here. In many respects, they're of course very limited, and they can be grossly misleading if you're thinking of wanting to make progress in the full four-dimensional theory. And one sad truth, of course, one usually ends up spending far too much time on them and looking at their beautiful properties as toy models and mathematical models. Okay, now by contrast, let us remind ourselves, gravity in 4D really has local excitations, and its quantum theory will need to be regularized and renormalized, and it cannot be reduced to quantum mechanics, which is possible for pure gravity in 2D and 3D. And qualitatively different tools are also needed. So it's a whole step up from these toy models. Be wary of assertions that these issues are not there because gravity is somehow special and different, and because it's background independent, perhaps. And also be aware of claims that really exotic and radically new ingredients are needed in the quantization because they have a nasty habit of leading nowhere. Okay, another warning. Well, our human and even our theoretical physicists' imagination of what might or might not happen at the Planck scale is extremely limited. I would say it's close to zero. So one has to take that into account when constructing a theory. Good guidelines are set it up with using as little guesswork as possible and try and make it robust and independent of your assumptions and take only few of these assumptions. This will certainly reduce non-uniqueness of your final theory, if ever there is one. And in addition, please use numerical reality checks because they have already proven to be very, very valuable. So less, maybe more. Formulations with many exotic ingredients, which I mean, you know, symmetries and ingredients of the theory that we currently do not observe. A prime candidate here is, of course, string theory. Unfortunately, seem to lead to an embarrassment of riches. So many, many free parameters, no predictive power. And I seem to sense that something of a backlash is underway. I mean, in the larger high-energy community, examples of that are the asymptotic safety program and something like Rojava-Lisch's gravity. So
by exotic, you mean strengthening?
What?
By exotic, you mean strengthening?
But I put it in inverted commas.
But do you mean that?
Well, I mean things like supersymmetry, which is an ingredient which you're postulating because it seems to be required, but we haven't seen it. So that's what I mean by exotic. Yeah, or brains or loops or strings. Indeed, that's what I mean. Okay, so.
Is this something that's not, is there any proposal for quantum gravity which is not exotic?
I will not tolerate any further interruptions because I have only 17 minutes. Keep the best of your questions for after my talk. Okay. Also, so even in a kind of in non-perturbative quantum gravity, which is you know what most of the people working maybe in this room on quantum gravity identify themselves with, we can adopt a what I call a radically conservative approach. So it's as little exotic as possible, you would say, in terms of input and methods by firstly being minimalist, in terms of the ingredients and the prior assumptions one is making, with as little background structure as needed, but not too little, I would say, also using simple standard quantum field theoretic methods, and however also using non-perturbative computational tools to quantitatively evaluate whatever comes out of this. So the CGT quantum gravity program really embodies these principles, and despite its conceptual simplicity, it leads to non-trivial and also unexpected results. So what is this? This is the one slide, the non-technical slide, which highlights the physical ideas behind what this approach is. So it's a confluence of ideas. I'd say, firstly, it's the primacy of pure geometry in the sense of Einstein's rods and clocks. So that's how you characterize physics. And you have a notion, an elementary notion of measuring distances. That's, of course, not the same as a metric. A metric is a far more advanced object to play around with. You are using important thing, which I keep emphasizing, powerful numerical methods to describe such geometry, quantum versions of such geometry far away from a flat space, a perturbative regime. And lastly, I mean, these ideas, of course, have been around for some time, some decades, but what CDT is really is the realization that the imposition of a local causal structure on path integral histories that go into a quantum superposition principle appears to be necessary to obtain a good classical limit of the theory in four dimensions. Okay, so one of the very few slides that has a formula on it. So what do we do in CDT? We non-perturbatively implement the gravitational path integral. So this is, of course, a very formal object you would write down in the continuum for pure gravity, for my example here. So this is a formal integration over all curved spacetimes, subject to certain boundary conditions. Here, we are just putting in the Einstein-Hilbert action for simplicity, say, associated with the Newton constant and lambda. And that thing is what we should evaluate. And then, you know, inserting whatever observables into the trace will give us, then hopefully, information of the physical properties of that theory. So this is all done now in CDT, very much in the spirit of lattice quantum field theory. One adopts an intermediate regularization that is not based on a fixed lattice, but because we are talking about a theory where geometry is dynamical, it's based on dynamical, in this case, triangular lattices. So whether they're triangular or something else, it's not really so important. And however, this reflects also the dynamical nature of space-time geometry. And the way this is implemented, what becomes of this sum, so how to make sense of this sum in a prescription, a non-perturbative prescription, is in the following. You take sum over inequivalent triangulations, and you label them by a UV cutoff, essentially the size of your building blocks, call that little a. The number of building blocks that go into the triangulations, which is finite typically, but you want to let those grow to infinity and take a to zero, and in this limit, evaluate whether there's any sense to this regularized version of this formal path integral here. And that gives me a nice opportunity here to list all my collaborators and people who've contributed in recent times to CBT. Okay, now, taking my inspiration from, where is she, Astrid, from yesterday. She said, matter matters. We don't have any indication that in CDT matter matters, but other things do definitely matter. So causal structure matters. How is that? Well, the C is already in the title. Now, what is the underlying issue? Well, non-perturbative geometry, so like doing a non-perturbative sum over all geometries, like you're doing in a non-perturbative implementation of the Feynman path integral, leads to strange and unanticipated effects, which have to do with that you consider geometries that can very much fluctuate on very short scales and therefore deviate in very unexpected ways from your classical and semi-classical expectation. For example, isn't it obvious by kind of assembling regularized geometries as we do from little four-dimensional triangular building blocks that you obtain a quantum spacetime as a superposition that has dimension 4? The answer is no. It generically does not happen because the quantum fluctuations are large and other dynamical features take over. So this is a feature that was only gradually understood with the help of computers, experiments, I would like to call them. So computers are being used to explore the physical content of a particular model you're looking at, working with. In dynamical dynamically triangulated quantum gravity, these were kind of Euclidean models, the precursors to the CDT models, one of two things happened to quantum geometry away from the cutoff scale. They're either polymerized, so they arrange themselves into effectively two-dimensional structures on large scales, or they crumpled, which meant they condensed around one or two vertices, leading never to any extended geometry macroscopically. So both of these things are totally unphysical. You don't find a physical explanation or interpretation of them in terms of 4D geometry. So these models don't have a classical limit. And of course, these are generic effects, and they have been rediscovered in various other approaches to quantum gravity. Most recently, I mean, there's a branched polymers that pop up, of course, everywhere one tries to construct dynamical models of geometry in three dimensions and higher. Now, the whole raison d'etre of causal dynamical triangulations is to fix this problem, and we've shown that effectively it has done this. How does it work? Well, we're using elementary building blocks that are not just Euclidean, but they are Lorentzian, so they're Lyapunov structure, and then we adopt gluing rules to put them together that ensure a well-behaved causal structure overall. Now, secondly, what else matters? Entropy matters. Now, what do I mean by entropy? I mean something quite specific. Now, that contributes to the nice results you find in this approach. So one of them, the first and most famous one maybe, is the dynamical emergence of a space-time with classical features from nothing but a quantum superposition of highly quantum fluctuating path integral histories. And the statement is that for suitable bare coupling constant, CDT quantum gravity dynamically produces a quantum space-time. Well, that's a vacuum. So we get out a vacuum state. We don't guess it. You get it out dynamically. And its macroscopic scaling properties are that of a four-dimensional space-time. And they also, we know more about it. It has a shape, by which I mean the three volume as a function of proper time, which fits that of a well-known cosmology, namely that of de Sitter space. Now, the point I want to emphasize on this slide is that this is brought about by a non-perturbative mechanism. So it's not that we see the classical solution because we are suppressing quantum fluctuations and we're just sitting, at some saddle point. Firstly, of course, we are Wickretating and we're seeing a Euclidean path integral which is unbounded below. So it's impossible that we're just doing classical or semi-classical physics. And indeed, when we look at it more closely, we find that de Sitter space, the emergence of this shape is brought about by an interaction of kind of energy and entropy in a statistical mechanical way of speaking. So it's the bare action you're putting into the path integral, but also contributions from what I call the entropy or the measure. So the number of microscopic space-time realizations of a given value of the bare action. And the region in coupling constant states where we see interesting physics, including this de Sitter matching, is far away from the perturbative regime. So the quantum fluctuations are still large, and entropy matters. So, and I just as an aside, I want to say, if I did quantum cosmology, I would never be able to find such a result, because I would always be staring just at the bare action. So there is no contribution from local fluctuations that could conspire with the action to result in some regularization of the path integral with a ground state that looks like this. Okay, thirdly, and my last point, numerical tools matter. So they simply reach where other methods don't, or certainly currently don't. And in that sense, they play a role like lattice methods do to explore non-perturbative properties of QCD, say. So none of the non-perturbative results and insight in four dimensions would have been possible without using Monte Carlo simulations, like the matching of the volume profiles with mini superspaces, determining Hausdorff spectral dimension, and things I don't have time to talk about now, and therefore also uncovering the degeneracies, these nasty thicknesses of Euclidean ensembles, understanding phase structure of the model, the difference between the Euclidean models and the Lorentzian models, and therefore the importance of being causal. And just here I'm flashing, you know, to make you understand what kind of reality checks that involves a phase diagram, concrete phase diagram measured in 4D CDT quantum gravity, where we can characterize the phases of nice geometry and of not very nice geometry. And we also, very importantly, have here a second order phase transition line, which we are exploring. So in addition, so we have these methods there. They serve also as a valuable, just powerful numerical lab, which you can use to perform reality checks on continuum approaches of quantum gravity, like those using functional renormalization group techniques we heard about yesterday. And there is a fruitful interaction with these approaches to challenge and to try and compare what happens. The most recent example I want to point out is a computation of RG flows in CDT, which we put on the net just this week. However, what I also observe is that still many in the non-perturbative quantum gravity community appear to be quite reluctant to accept numerical investigation as a valid tool. And I can, in part, only speculate what the possible explanations for this might be. Certainly, part is just an insufficient knowledge of Monte Carlo techniques and perhaps also requisite QFT and statistical mechanics tools. And of course, these are not things that you just pick up overnight. Yeah? You need to be an expert, or you need to be able to work with experts who know these techniques. And there are not too many people around in our community. I might also speculate maybe we are exposing, especially our young people, to too many soluble toy models. So they get a wrong impression of what quantum gravity is all about. Certainly, I think there's also an influence from the classical GR community, with this community to a large extent grew out of. They run proofs, mathematical theorems about, you know, behavior of the classical theory. But is that an appropriate way to understand quantum gravity? So we might just have some wrong expectations and hope what an interacting quantum theory of four-dimensional geometry will really look like. So what I want to do, to encourage you to do, is to amend point one and embrace numerical tools as reality checks to predict what your own models of quantum gravity are predicting. Okay, thank you.